Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back. Brilliant Ed Vitagliano is your host. At least that was the opinion of Jan Markell in the last segment. I'm going to get a lot of mileage out of that.
Yeah.
And she didn't actually say I was brilliant. She said the comment was brilliant.
Yeah,
so
but
there is a difference.
You're spinning that. Yeah, we know how you spin.
Oh, I'm spinning, baby. I'm going to spin it. All right. So I'm sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. And good news for those of you who have been praying for Walker Wildman, who's frequently on Today's Issues. He and his wife, Lexi, had their twins last night. I don't think anybody in the world is happier about that than Lexi, who's carrying two almost 8-pound twin boys together, almost 16 pounds. That's...
And now Walker's turn comes.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, yes. Waking up at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning.
Listen, my wife and I babysit our grandkids some, and we do have a five-month-old is the youngest right now. And just in terms of schedules for kids, I just don't know how you handle twins. If they're in sync or if they're just – if they're each doing their own thing, my goodness, that's going to make for a really, really long first 6 or 7 months.
So if Walker shows up to work looking a little tired, well, we're going to go easy on him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we will.
Yeah.
He's if he winds up looking as old as you or I, Fred, we'll know he's had a tough night. So, all right, now we're going to bring in Steve Jordahl, reporter and news anchor for American Family News. He's surprisingly sat there very quiet during this exchange. Good morning, Steve.
Good afternoon. Yeah. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, as they say.
Yeah, that's right. All right, what kind of news we got cooking? What's cooking in the kitchen there, Steve?
Polenta last night in my kitchen, but I spilled it.
Wait. You were cooking polenta? It's an Italian dish.
Yeah.
Polenta's awful.
Oh, I enjoy eating it, but last night as I was turning around, somehow my hand caught the pot and it spilled hot, sticky polenta everywhere.
Oh, that's hard to get.
And so I'm going to be spending the afternoon after work today. That's what I'm going to be doing is cleaning.
You didn't clean it up last night?
No, I did, but you can only clean it up so much, and then I've got to go a second round. No,
you think about. White sticky rice, but worse.
Yeah,
because it's very, very small.
Yeah.
Now it's is your birthday today?
Today is my birthday.
It better be because I posted something on your Facebook.
That's right.
Page.
I did. Thank you. Yes, 105. But I've taken very good care of my body.
Well, you look good for 105.
Thank you.
You don't really look good for your actual age, but
37. But I've really run my body down. It's one of those two.
How old are you, by the way?
59.
59. You're 59? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You look good for
knocking
59.
On the big door there.
Right? Yeah. 6-0.
Yeah, right. I'm going to avoid that one if possible or how, but somehow
there's only one real way you can avoid it, Steve.
I don't want to do that. Let's not go there, actually.
All right. What do you got? What's up?
New Zealand decided this is something that they can do because they don't have a Second Amendment there. The Prime Minister of New Zealand has kind of, maybe with the help from her parliament or whatever, but they have banned assault rifles, and they are going to be collecting weapons. So obviously they are still reeling from the tragedies that happened last week and at the mosques in New Zealand, and their solution is to ban military-style semi-automatic weapons and high-capacity magazines. It's getting a lot of play here from the gun control people on this side of the pond that think it's a wonderful idea.
The New York Times, by the way, I just saw an article that said New Zealand shows America what leadership is like, real leadership.
Right.
Yeah. So we're going to hear that drumbeat.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Someone with maybe a little bit of a counter opinion is Ben Shapiro, who was on Fox and Friends this morning. And host Brian Kilmeade asked him a question, which you're going to hear, and then his response. I thought it was appropriate. Cut one.
Is this a reasonable answer to the massacre that took place last week?
It's an emotionally reasonable answer, but it's not a factually reasonable answer. There are some 1.2 million guns in New Zealand. In 2017, the entire country of New Zealand had 35 murders. Most of those, or at least many of those, were not with a gun in the first place. So they're now talking about criminalizing presumably hundreds of thousands of New Zealand citizens who don't turn over their guns in response to an isolated incident statistically. No matter how terrible an incident is, if it is isolated statistically, criminalizing hundreds of thousands of law-abiding people on the basis of that seems like bad policy.
First of all, 35 murders in all of New Zealand last year is remarkable.
Yes, and New Zealand has become the kind of the go-to place for people wanting to get away from the craziness.
Yeah.
A lot of rich people are buying up land in New Zealand and putting in these kinds of bunkers for the apocalypse. I'm not kidding. They're, and in fact, they're angering New Zealanders because they're saying, listen, we don't like these bunkers, and we don't want a bunch of people coming here if something goes, you know, badly around the world. So
the New Zealand shooter was actually an Aussie.
Yeah, and from Australia, if you're not familiar with that term. But New Zealand's apparently a very nice place to live and raise a family and
gorgeous, gorgeous
country. Only 35 murders. I don't know what the population is, but
Several million. 60
million? 5 or 6 million.
5 or 6. Let me look. I'll look it up. I will have that for you shortly.
It's not even the size of a bit large American city. So, and you have cities like New York and Chicago that have millions of people and 35 murders. They have a lot more than
30.
Yeah, more than 35 murders.
Well, and here's the thing once again. They can bring in these laws as much as they want, but a bad person with a bad intent.
Right.
Is going to get their hands on a gun and do the same kind of damage.
Right.
If they think by passing this law, this directive, whatever it is in New Zealand, that that's going to stop another nut from coming into their country and doing the same thing again, they're woefully misled.
Right.
Because that's how it works. The bad guys are able to get guns, regardless of how many laws you have in place.
Right.
You know, in this country, we have these kinds of tragedies, maybe not to the extent as far as the numbers of people killed in one incident, but we have people killing people. We talk about Chicago. What was hundreds of people murdered there every year?
Yeah.
Most of them with people with guns in their hands that they've acquired illegally.
Illegally, right.
So just, as Ben Shapiro said, it's an emotional reaction, the politically correct crowd.
You want to do something.
Want to do something, but this is not the solution.
Well, and to Ben Shapiro's point, you are now going to criminalize people who have done nothing wrong. Hmm. He said, if you keep your guns, you're now a criminal.
Yep.
And but this, let me tell you, it's in a sense, it is like the abortion issue, and that is when you have people on the left who are so crazed in their desire for one side of this perspective, they stop thinking rationally, and that's the kind of reaction New Zealand has had. Ben Shapiro makes a couple of great points there.
To button that up, fewer than 5 million people in New Zealand.
Mm. Fewer than 5 million. It's unfair to compare it to a big city where you have everybody crammed into, you know, whatever number of square miles.
Right.
New Zealand's not huge, but it is a country and people, a lot of rural,
right,
probably communities too. So
I heard you all talking last hour a little bit about Netanyahu and Pompeo taking on the anti-Semitism here. One of New York's congressmen, his name is Max Rose. He's a freshman. And a Democrat freshman from New York, and he has apologized to his constituents. I didn't find any sound. I would have brought it in if I could. But he is frustrated. His constituents are frustrated at a town hall, and he apologized for, quote, not protecting them from Ilhan Omar, who used those anti-Semitic tweets. He says, as a young congressman, I've got to tell you I'm sorry. He told the audience was gathered by the Council of Jewish Organizations, so he's talking to a bunch of his Jewish constituents. You sent me to Congress to take responsibility. You sent me to Congress to have your back, and I failed you because I know that Congressman Ilhan Omar's comments really caused you an awful lot of pain by bringing up anti-Semitic tropes. So not a lot in her – there's more than one in her caucus that are having second thoughts. They're actually thinking of running a challenger against your primarying her coming up in 2020.
Well, and I've heard that about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and you know, some of these freshmen that came in are real, let's say, firebrands in terms of their rhetoric. And boy, if you upset the apple cart and you know challenge the establishment like some of these freshmen have, it does invite backlash, and some of them may find that backlash manifesting itself in a primary challenger from the in the leftist camp there that that could unseat these people in 2 years, in less than 2 years. So.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Next week in Washington, D.C., the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee is holding their annual meeting. Now, this is a gathering of 18,000 pro-Israel Americans. And I believe Nancy Pelosi has been invited to speak there, along with Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. Going to be interesting to see if they get challenged. And do they really believe this resolution that they passed? Was effective and will be effective. So we'll be watching that very carefully.
I'm sure Nancy Pelosi, I'm sure they'll defend it, but it's clear that it was watered down.
Oh, yeah.
And did not even, as far as I remember, didn't even significantly chastise Omar.
Didn't even mention her,
but yeah. it threw anti-Semitism in with every other kind
Islamophobia.
Of...
Islamophobia.
So that it basically took the sting out of it,
yeah.
And addressed issues that aren't even issues in the Democratic Party, while ignoring the one issue that led to the demand for a resolution.
Yep.
It was a crazy bit of political hanky panky there, but
it was Benjamin Netanyahu is supposed to be in the United States for a couple of days next week. Maybe he's going to attend that too. I don't know.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah. Speaking of Democrat apologies, the Tennessee Party Democrat Party chairwoman has been forced to apologize. She at one point called her state racist. The comment was, "We have a little bit of a problem in this state, and I'm just going to go and say it. This is a racist state." Well, she was called out on it, and she had to walk that back. This was her walk back, which I thought was interesting. In the heat and frustration of seeing and hearing the constant drumbeat of bigotry, misogyny, and homophobia coming from Republicans at the state legislature, I used a poor choice of words and vented my frustration, and I apologize. My words, she didn't mean to offend the whole state. She just meant to offend the Republicans in the state.
So Republicans in Tennessee are misogynistic, what, racist and homophobic?
Bigots and
bigots.
Homophobic, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
So I don't know if Republicans knew that, but
it does probably come as a surprise to them.
Yes.
They're going to reevaluate the their Democrats, lives as we speak.
That the Democratic chairperson for the party in Tennessee thinks that of them.
Speaking of crazy things that Democrats are saying, I know, Fred, you asked me to grab a sound clip this morning that interested you.
Oh, very much so. And this is Democrat Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. And she believes that even if you're in this country illegally, and we know there are millions.
Right.
They believe, she believes, they should have the right to pay into Social Security and collect Social Security benefits. All right, even though they're in the country illegal, they're not citizens of this country. And so let's have a listen to this, but also we're going to listen to Mark Stein. He's a columnist, and what he had to say about all of this. Cut number three.
We need comprehensive immigration reform. If you are in this country now, you must have the right to pay into Social Security, to pay your taxes, to pay into the local school system, and to have a pathway to citizenship.
To a lot of young people, the abolition of citizenship is actually something that, which is what this is, by the way, mm-hmm. Because if the perks of citizenship now go to people who just wander in, you are abolishing citizenship. And I think in some strange sentimental way, the open borders thing has an appeal with the AOC crowd. That whole sort of thing, you know, we are the world, we are the children, I think that literally appeals to young people.
Yeah, and I think what Mark Stein is saying there is a sentiment that Gillibrand and others are appealing to out there. It's this globalist sentiment. Let's get rid of patriotism.
Right.
Patriotism is, and they equate it to racism.
Yes.
If you're patriotic, you're a racist.
Because you like your people better than other people.
Yes.
Right.
Now, that's the thinking that's in all of this. But this idea of abolition of citizenship, it just really struck with me this morning. Yeah, this is what it's all about. They want to get rid of the idea of being American and putting America first,
right,
and make America great again. This is their way of diminishing all of that, diminishing citizenship, and because they are globalist in their minds.
Right.
They don't think there should be borders. You talk about why they don't want security, President Trump to build the wall on the border. This is all it. They believe people should come and go into this country in any way, in any fashion. Doesn't matter whether you're a citizen or not. Doesn't matter how you arrived here legally or illegally. You ought to be able to enjoy all the benefits that we Americans or Americans have worked hard to achieve.
Well, I will say this. I'm not worried about Senator Kirsten Gillibrand winning the nomination for the Democratic Party. I'm looking at one story here where a recent poll in New York found that only 29% in her own state view her favorably, 35% unfavorably among registered voters statewide. She's not even popular in her own state. I don't think she's got a shot at getting the Democratic nomination. She did declare officially, I think, this past weekend. But the ideas she is floating, I think, yes, are part of the fabric of the Democratic Party now. Mm-hmm. To your point, I think whatever they say, comprehensive immigration reform, what the Democratic Party believes is open borders and amnesty.
Yes.
And people coming in and being able to settle and do whatever they want. That's why she says they should be able to pay into Social Security and get Social Security back, have access to all the health care they need, education, all those kind of things, even though they're in here illegally. I think one study I said, I hope I'm not misremembering these figures. I think it was 80% of illegal immigrants in this country are on welfare.
Yes.
I mean, it's a huge percentage. Mm-hmm. So they're coming here and they are immediately going on welfare. And everyone else is paying for that. And
yes,
that is what Mark Stein said, this idea that this is essentially abolishing citizenship. That is a, dare I say it, that's a brilliant analysis, mm-hmm, of what this is ultimately about, because these are globalist forces that don't like the idea of separate nations, mm-hmm, because then you're loyal to the nation and not to Brussels or some other kind of headquarters for the globalist union.
Yep.
Anyway. Marking it down, Ed Battagliano sharing brilliance today.
Yeah, that's right. Well, when you're brilliant, when you're brilliant yourself, you recognize it in others. So. Folks, I'm not being arrogant here. This is an ongoing joke here on the program. You had to be there earlier to understand.
Our listeners know you, Andy.
Yeah. They do.
They're just kidding, you know.
All right. There's a new poll out from Pew Research Center, which finds that President Trump's popularity among white evangelicals is falling. Since 2017, it has fallen by 9 points from, 78% it was, and now it has decreased to 69% of white evangelicals who support President Trump. There's some good news in this poll, but I wanted to ask you guys if you think that a couple of these strange obsessions that the president has is playing into this. One is his obsession with Kellyanne Conway's husband, George Conway, and the Twitter war that's going on there. And then even maybe stranger than that, the obsession that he has with John McCain, who he just can't seem to let lay, literally, I suppose. But I wanted to play you a little bit about the reaction. Meghan McCain has been at times amused by this and at times enraged. This was one of her amused moments.
I think if I had told my dad, 7 months after you're dead, you're going to be dominating the news and all over Twitter, he would think it was hilarious that our president was so jealous of him, mm-hmm, that he was dominating the news cycle in death as well.
I don't know if it's jealousy, but do you think it's contributing to the maybe evangelicals saying this isn't what we really want to see from our president?
I will say, and this is just my opinion, I have done a lot of reading about this. I think this is an informed opinion, but I think what's behind that, I don't think these most recent things are really behind these survey results. I think that there are inroads being made in the evangelical community by leftist evangelicals like Russell Moore and others. And I don't want to get into a Russell Moore bashing. You know, brilliant people don't stoop to that.
That's right.
You know, but they are trying to take the evangelical community to the left on issues like immigration. Mm-hmm. I think they're being successful to some extent on that. And so, if you're going to go to the left and encourage people to think as leftists and as socialists, then you're going to draw them away from conservatives/Republicans. And then I would say this, some of this is going to fall on President Trump himself, because there are a lot of evangelicals, I think, who voted for him because of his promise to protect religious liberty and life. They were always nervous about his character, and they were always nervous about what kind of moral person he is. I'm not calling the president immoral. I'm just saying evangelicals were a little nervous about that because of his past. Has he really changed? That kind of thing. And I think his habits in terms of tweeting and getting into these verbal battles continuously, I think has driven down popularity and favorability amongst evangelicals, because they don't like this contentiousness. And they see this in President Trump. So,
you know, President Trump has been described as a brawler.
Right.
You know, East End, New York, that's where he grew up. And even good folks, I mean, they have that kind of character there. But what makes him weak in some people's minds is actually what makes him strong. Because who else but a brawler could withstand the attacks that he undergoes every day?
Right. That's true,
you know,
Fred.
When you have the mainstream media that has gone ballistic against this man, who hate this man night after night after night, the MSNBCs, the CNNs, and others, it's all about we hate Trump.
And they give this guy, George Conway, all kinds of media attention because he hates Trump.
He hates Trump. And, you know, the question's been asked. I mean, we've talked to Pastor Robert Jeffers at First Baptist. How is the man holding up?
Yeah,
because he's constantly under attack, and it's just the way he is. Someone says, you know, he gets up every morning, and it's a brand new day.
Right.
And I'm ready and willing to go. He didn't need the presidency. He's a billionaire.
Right. Yes.
He doesn't take any salary.
Right.
He's just there because I honestly do believe that he feels he has the solution to make America great again. And, yes, he's sure rough around the edges, and that's perhaps putting it mildly. But you do need, and I think Pastor Jefferson says this, you do need that kind of character right now to fight for the things that many evangelicals, fight for life.
Right.
To stay true to Israel.
Yes, that's another one.
Those huge issues, and to get the economy going again.
I do think, though, that it wears, for evangelicals who aren't used to that kind,
yeah.
They're not used to brawlers.
Yes.
And I'll just say that's I think that has driven down the numbers. Now, I think those numbers can come back up because when a fight really does come, people are going to want a brawler. They're going to want somebody who's tough as nails, and maybe those numbers will come back up.
So. Let me just give you the payoff for what I said. It was the good news out of the survey. We can talk about this tomorrow if you want to go into more of it. But the Pew survey found that support from non-white Catholics, read that Hispanics, has doubled since 2017 from 13% to 26%.
Yep.
Well, there's a lot of things going on in our country that it's probably hard to explain in terms of polls, but we saw that in our story meeting, that was very interesting as well. The support amongst Hispanics has gone up. All right, it's Thursday. That means tomorrow we won't talk about that story on this show. We have Trivia Friday tomorrow, right? This is Thursday, right?
Right. And the first question is, who in this room is brilliant?
A brilliant person can't remember what day it is. All right, folks, more great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. Please join us.